at the PLO events where I speak. A couple of years, Zig has always had the whole shooting match, and there's always a handful of people who, before anybody speaks, the first thing they do when they get there in the morning is they walk over to the tables and they buy everything. They just give them their credit card number and say, yeah, I don't care who's speaking, I don't care, well, I want one of everything they sell.
I want their names.
So there's always...
I want their credit card number.
And by the way, they tend, if you went and looked, what you would find is they're probably the most successful people
yep.
in the entire audience. And there's it's not coincidence, there's correlation. But, you know, what I've always said is if there's 15 of them who do that purely of their own initiative, there's another 15 or 30 or 50 or 100 who would do it if they were asked. It's just nobody asks them, you know, and it, nobody even has it on an order form. Nobody has a... Here's the deep discounted price for one of everything everybody's got today.
Ought to be
check
every
here.
Order
of course it should. Yeah. Of course it should. And every business has that factor in it. And when you miss it, you know, you leave out a real profitable opportunity.
And you know the bad part about it is, you know, we teach Jim Fletcher. We teach the I got it before the sign was up. You know, we teach them to, you know, do the silver, gold, platinum, and the big package gets the thermostat and the filtration systems and the maintenance. But if left to their own devices, they start with the cheapest thing because they want the sale. You know, they don't even package and try to sell the top stuff. It's always...
Yeah, actually, let me mention...
You know, the minimum.
Joe Polish, Ron Markey, Ron,
and everyone listening should really get a good idea of my voice because I, in the many few years ahead, I will probably influence marketing in this country more than any other superstar.
They'll write songs about you.
They're working on
Now I have to edit.
You want to put your web address and your phone numbers on your one?
I'll get to that a little bit.
Not only
once I start
future generations will study you.
Well, yeah. Better we heard it before lunch than immediately afterwards.
They'll all cry when they hear your name.
They're shipping away on a statue out there.
The legacy is being laid as I speak.
So to speak.
Anyway, follow up with what Jim was saying with packaging. It's one thing I've actually taught a lot of my cleaners to do, which increases the average sale dramatically, which goes back to continuity and lifetime value. Just, you know, once you can teach people the value of a client, how to get money from them continuously, and how to package up your services so it's easier for people to make a decision, I think it's really important for every business to think about how could you bundle up what it is you sell, how could you package it to make it more appealing in order to not only get a higher price point, but make it easier for the person that's buying from you to make a decision to buy. For instance, if you're going to go into a stereo store and you're going to look for a CD player and a tape player, it's a lot easier to, in speakers and everything, it's a lot easier to have something put together in a rack system than it is to buy everything individually. And so whenever you're selling things a la carte, which is a term that Dan originally...
Or cafeteria style.
Cafeteria style, whatever. You know, you're giving people multiple choices, and really, you being the business owner, you being the entrepreneur, you should be the one that that designs the package to make it really simple for consumers to buy. And especially right now with the internet and everything, there's so many choices available to people. And the businesses that are going to make money are the ones that are going to make it, they're going to bring simplicity to the confusion of all the choices that are available to everybody. And that's exactly what you should do. I mean, you take Bill Phillips, for instance, who, when I was working with him, when I first started working with him, God, going back over about 3 years ago, he had the contest that he runs, the big EAS physique transformation contest, and he had all these top 10 winners that used the supplements that he sold in a certain way. They would take like a Myoplex shake, they would take Betagen, they would take all these various supplements and they'd mix them all together and combine them, and they were selling a lot of these supplements individually, but they were using all these people that won the contest that had changed, transformed their physique, and people would call up and they're like, well, I want to look like this Drew guy. I want to look like this Meredith guy. And so I had explained to Bill that, you know, you should package up these supplements in this certain way and make a, you know, a lean package, make a mass package, which he was doing sort of, but he wasn't quite doing it as well as he could based around the personalities that were, you know, being promoted. And that everyone was looking at these people in these magazines saying, I want to look like this person. What did she take? So when they started saying, well, this is exactly what Meredith did, and you can get this line of supplements for $300 a month, all of a sudden the sales, you know, went through the roof. And if you take in a company like that, it results in millions of dollars. And
you know who's discovered it lately in the restaurant business? Is the Stuart Anderson Black Angus restaurants. Their most recent, I think now three times in a row, the three most recent TV commercial campaigns have been selling packaged dinners where it's the steak dinner for two that includes the steak and it includes the appetizer tray and it includes two desserts and it's a one price deal. And I gotta believe they're getting people who otherwise, you know, might not order a dessert or they might not order an appetizer. I just think it's absolutely the right strategy. I'm always opposed to cafeteria, so you're absolutely right.
Well, Dan, you know, with Bob Willis, we sell a coaching program to dentists. We started out with the big program. We didn't have anything else. That was it. You know, you put it all together and package it, and that's literally what people want. They want to be able to have a turnkey deal that they can walk in and basically you plug them in and it does it for them. And the bigger, the better.
You know, anybody that's got restaurants, you know, for a real good package name, I've been going, this is Jim Fly.
Robbie's not going to be happy.
I've been going to the same Chinese restaurant for the last 15 years, and I order the same thing every time, and it's got a great package name. I order plate A.
Well, that's because they designed the menu after you. You've been coming there for 15 years. We'll have the Jim Fleck pack.
Mm-hmm. Plate A, plate B, plate C.
For those of you listening to these tapes, I'm going to make sure that these guys repeat their names. You can send me a letter and thank me later. This is Ronald Graham.
Yeah, make sure it's Ronald Graham that's big.
Well, since you're up.
Okay, I'm up. The question, as I recall about an hour ago, was what multi-million-dollar ideas have you had that change your business or something?
Your absolute best breakthrough.
Crap like that. Well, actually, I have had two of them. And through my career, anyway, I watch people constantly walk over the dollars to get to the dimes and spend their entire lives just trying to make a living. And that applies to us at the table as well, because it applies to everybody. And I'm always looking for those things that will put me in a position that will allow me to make the really big money, because in marketing, especially in marketing, there's so much we can do. There's a never-ending supply of lead-generating techniques that we can use, and there's always so many ways we can get customers into the system. So I'm always asking myself, well, I can do all of these things, but what can I do and make work that will produce me the most revenue the quickest? And so the two that are really working for us right now, one of which almost anybody can use, and one of which that very few people will use. I'll take the latter first, and that's our television commercial that is actually making money on the front end, selling a low ticket item.
Well, actually, let me interrupt for a second, because when you say most can't or most won't, use TV. Listen, again, it's an underused and therefore underestimated media, both short form and long form.
I'll go next.
Good. And first of all, the local level business, if they happen to be a high transaction value business, like a cosmetic surgeon or a dentist who's doing cosmetic dentistry, that sort of a business, they can do long form. And there are people across the country who have half-hour shows that they've made only for a practice that's in Virginia Beach, and it's only going to air in Virginia Beach, but it works for them. And spots, I mean, you teach attorneys how to do spot advertising effectively, you use spot advertising effectively, all on a local basis. So what you're experiencing nationally is tweakable and adaptable to a lot of people who would instantly void it.
Well, I was referring to the long form half an hour show, and you've got to admit that takes a lot of money to put together, and there's a lot of failure. And in fact, we failed at it about 9 or 10 or 12 times.
Yeah, it takes persistence.
We finally succeeded, and God knows how much money. It's measured in 6 figures, probably 7 figures now. All of those failures over the years that it took to do it.
That's called tests, not failures.
Okay. I don't care what you call it. The money's gone.
Money's gone.
The point is that most people are not going to go to the long long form route because there is just too much grief involved with it. It's too expensive. It is finally working for us because the constant job that we have is to fill the front end cost effectively so we can get a customer at or about free or better. And once that nut is cracked, the rest is relatively easy, assuming you have a back end. The back end is easy compared to getting that customer in the front end. And so the television is now producing actually more than it costs. I mean, I wouldn't want to just run it and try to create an empire just on that without a back end, but we are to that point. But the next thing that I started playing with just last year was radio, short form radio, 60 second spot radio. And I love radio for several reasons. One, I mean, you can be on the air 4 days after you go into a studio or a tape recorder at home and create a 60-second commercial, and you can change it instantly. And there's almost no editing. And so the trick is to get the radio first. It starts with the right radio buyer, and then the right commercial that'll draw the lead in. And it is just lead generating a radio that I'm talking about here. On television now, we sell a product. On a radio, we just generate leads. I'm doing very well with radio right now. We're getting leads at somewhere between $10 and $15 raw media costs coming into us, and then we're converting a substantial number of those leads in the back end to our back end products and services. And we're going contrary to conventional wisdom. We're actually starting with a high priced product on radio and then working our way down instead of what most people will start with a low product and work our way up. And we're making that work very well, but the reason that I chose radio and television is very simple. There is no end. Well, I guess there is an end, but in other words, you can grow it extremely fast, unlike many of the other techniques that you've taught us to use. And I had to look at that, and if I'm going to get from plan A to plan B and get there quickly, then I have to use media that I can expand on once the test is over. And those two are done very well. And when one's down, the other one's up. And so with a combination of those two, it truly is a multi-million dollar, I wouldn't say discovery, but multi-million dollar techniques that we're using to grow the business. And we will grow it very, very rapidly now that those pieces are in place.
Well, I would also say that absolutely TV and radio allows you to ramp up probably faster to big numbers maybe than anything else on the planet.
Right.
Also, businesses should not neglect the idea of long-form radio. When that's done well, I mean, the biggest financial planning practice in this city, in Phoenix, was built from scratch.
Might want to define long-form radio.
Half-hour, block time, where you're either doing a half an hour or an hour. Essentially, you're buying the time and putting on your own show. And it's infomercial-ish in nature in the sense that the public doesn't know it's paid. It's a paid entire program. And one of the nice things about radio, by the way, is you don't have to tell them. On TV, we now have to tell them. Paid advertisement, paid programming on radio, you don't. You can have a two-hour radio show, and the public never it has to be informed that that's all paid time. But case history with financial planning firms in Phoenix, large firms with 10, 15, 20 years in the business, they were all eclipsed by a guy who went from zero to the largest practice with a personal income in excess of several million bucks a year in a three-year period of time purely on the back of a three-hour-a-week all-radio program and all paid, bought time. So these are media, again, a lot of business people, because it's kind of intimidating to deal with broadcast, but it shouldn't be ignored. You wanted to go next.
Yeah. Tax preference.
There you go.
On the local level, one big, huge breakthrough idea that has happened to us, we've taken ad copy in the direct mail to help build our business, and we did very well with it, and we were getting, depending on the ad, 2-1, 5-1, 10-1 return on investment on every time we'd run whatever direct mail piece, a flyer insert, whatever it was. Well, if you take that same, let's say just one particular city that these ads in the direct mail is working, and you get on the local TV station or you buy the local radio spot, we do, if it's a 30-second TV commercial, we're doing, following the direct mail 101, we're doing the problem, agitate, solve, sales formula just in 30 seconds on TV. And so we have a hook. and then we have an offer at the end, just like everything you would do in a normal sales piece, but it's on TV, and it's a broadcast media, but we're actually applying direct response techniques to it. And what's happened is, you know, a return on investment that we used to get I'm happy with 1-to-1 return on investment just to get the customer for free. But we're getting 2-to-1 to 5-to-1. Well, all of a sudden on TV, we're getting 25 or 50-to-1 return on investment. All of a sudden on the radio spots, we're getting 35-to-1 return on investment.
50-to-1?
Yes.
Well, you probably ought to quit that. It's working too well.
But, I mean, we have offices that can't handle the phones. The lines of people in the offices are, there's 2-hour wait in the lobby just to get back to a computer and get their taxes done. And this is, I mean, it's driving so many customers that we're having to put up many more offices in that particular state just to handle the overflow of customers, because the radio and the TV is driving all these people in our offices on the phone. Well, we basically started doing the radio and the TV more because, or got into it a little bit. We started doing it more because we ran out of places to advertise in the direct mail. We could only run with so many flyers in the local newspaper, so many insert coupon decks that hit a certain time in the area. Well, with TV and radio, we can buy specific 2-week periods where we blitz them, because there's a certain time, and timing is so important. There's a certain time of year when a certain customer wants whatever it is. If it's a quick money, get it back the next day, that's what we hit them for 2 weeks. Then we'll wait a week or two, and then when there's a middle income group that is just getting all their stuff from their mortgage and everything, and they're getting the ones that are going to be paying a tax preparer that tax season in about a 2-week or 3-week span. The ones that are going to do something, that now we hit those as a different commercial.
30-second spots.
30-second spots, and then I'll wait to we blitz to like the last 6 or 8, 10 days of tax season. There is not except for my clients, I don't know of any, very few other tax businesses around the country that are promoting heavily the last week of tax season before the 15th, because they're so inundated with customers. And so I teach my guys to do everything you can do to get all your existing customers in the door in March and give them incentives to come in, because I want your slate open to take on new customers the last 6, 8, 10 days of tax season, because there's a whole rush of, you guys all know, right before April 15th, when everybody's got to get in and get the taxes done. And so I am blitzing a radio, TV, and direct mail campaigns the last 6 or 8, 10 days of tax season, which is unheard of in the tax business, because people in the tax business, they get on the phone and they answer the phone and say, we aren't taking any more customers, goodbye. I mean, how stupid is that? Where we're actually cleaning our slate and saying, come on, we got no appointment necessary. Come on down. We've got extra staff on hand to handle you. Get in here. We'll help you out.
You know, I think that speaks to the issue of, this is Bill Glazer, Ron. It speaks to the issue of the best time to fish is when there's fish to catch. We do the same thing right before Christmas. We buy a television and radio campaign 10 days before Christmas, which every retailer in the world is saying, I'm so damn busy right before Christmas, you know, I can't handle it all. But that's when people are buying, yeah. So that's when I think that you should be in front of them.
Josh, I got an idea. This is Ron LeGrand. Have you ever thought about educating your people that the time to file their taxes is not on April 15th?
Well, he does. He moves all his regular customers early in order to clear some
public awareness program. Don't file your taxes on
I don't want to push a rock uphill. People that are going to procrastinate no matter what you do, and I'm just going to know that they're going to be, the IRS has got in their mind, they just got to make it in by April 15th. So I'm just going to, when they come.
Well, IRS is not a good enemy to make anyway. Maybe that was a bad idea.
Well,
I don't know why they'd have a problem with it.
It raises two issues. One is, you know, what he's done is very contrarian in his business. And like Bill just said, against the norm in your business. And there's usually an opportunity to be found in looking at what everybody else is doing. Earl Nightingale said, if you don't have a success example, look around at what everybody else is doing, do the opposite. You'll be right more often than not. The other thing is, and it's not to push a rock uphill, is, you know, I tell people that 20 years ago, I used to look for challenges.
That's how we got old, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, now, you know, there's too much money to be made without challenge.
Gill nets and grenades.
You know, I mean, why do it the hard way? So I think it's brilliant. Were you exhausted or?
I got a question, quick one for Chauncey. At April 15th, does your business close down?
Not close down, but it turns off like a faucet.
Okay, I just wondering. There's a lot of people probably procrastinate up to the last minute. Could you not file extensions and have do an after the 15th special so that all those that have not done it can come down to your place and we'll do the extension for you and then we'll do your return?
It's a personal preference. Other tax businesses, I got clients that they just so overloaded the last couple weeks of tax season that they do that, so they have work to do for the next couple months. I feel so much urgency and so much got to get it done right now that, yeah, we still have some business that comes in after April 15th that we handle, but with the scare of the debt, scare them to death, and fear text, the fear sell and everything, we want to do a lot of business in 3 months, and then we want to go on vacation for another 9.
Sure. So it's really a good point is that you're going to build the urgency rather than do what a lot of other people do is to say, well, hell, we can't handle it anyway, so let's just go to plan B.
It's even another point. It gets to, like you said, personal preference, but I usually say lifestyle preference.
Okay.
It gets to the issue that, see, I believe you can structure a business any way you want it to be, and you can find customers who will buy from you exactly the way you want them to buy from you, and you can train them in a certain type of behavior that suits the way you want to do business. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. Not to say that everybody has to do it, but, you know, some people feel compelled to operate a business in a certain way or to have certain hours and all of that because, that again, that's the norm in their business. And I think it's totally unnecessary. Who wants to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
TJ Rolletter. One of the things that Eileen and I are trying to do...
You found yourself a job, haven't you?
Yeah.
Not pay very well.
Our mission for the last 3-4 years is to turn direct mail into a fine art. That's really what we're wanting to do. I mean, direct mail is such a cool thing. I just love it because it's got that impulsiveness to it. I mean, you know, or the, not maybe not impulsive isn't the right word, but instant gratification. You know, where especially if you're mailing first class. The sales letters go out, the orders come rushing in, and I love that feeling of throwing campaigns out there constantly and always looking forward to, you know, what the numbers are going to do and, you know, where are we at on this promotion, where are we at on this one. And so Eileen and I, since 1996, the fall of 96, we started doing something that everybody could benefit from so greatly. We finally got our act together, and before, see, we ran our business 8 years just kind of sporadically mailing. You know, we try to throw 6-8 offers out there a year to our best customers, but we had no real plan, no real strategy. So finally, we got our act together, and since 96, we've been numbering. Each mailing gets numbered, and we try to come up with as many as we can. You know, every month we'll look at what's, you know, next month, and, well, what are we going to do next month? So we'll start planning all these mailings for next month. And we always have these tight deadlines, and we know how long it takes to about, even though we're always running a little bit behind the deadlines.
TJ, could I interrupt you, and maybe you could give our listeners an idea of how many pieces you mail and what?
What is your name? No, I'm sorry.
Dave Dildotto.
Gee, you've lost weight.
He emails a whole. They mail a lot of mail, and I mean, they're really, it's a machine, and
right,
the kind of mailing, you've got to be organized and know what the heck you're doing.
Well, and once you set up a system, that can happen. Like, for instance, here's what we do, and machine is a good analogy. We have a meeting every Wednesday afternoon where our staff gets together, and for the sole purpose of, number one, planning new mailings, we've got our customer list all divided out just like you do, and everybody around this table, you know, where you separate out the best customers from the poorest. And the best customers are anybody that spends more money more often. And so we're constantly planning different mailings to different sections of our customers. And then on Thursdays are our supplier meeting where the printer and the mailing house gets together with us as a group. And then we do all the implementation prep. You know, the pieces, number of pieces, you know, first class bulk, all that stuff. But the point is, every mailing is numbered. There's dates attached to it, deadlines that we're always having to fight. It's constant battle to beat the deadline somehow.
But if you didn't put yourself under that pressure,
right? Then we would just, you know, we would just. I mean, for 8 years we ran our business on a real haphazard kind of thing. We never numbered any of the mailings, so there was always the confusion.
How many different campaigns are you doing in a year now?
Well, since we're doing over 100 a year
campaigns.
Yeah, and of course 50 of those are front end, because we do it one mailing a week. So,
how many pieces you mail a month?
Oh, it just all varies depending on what's working for us, because we're always testing different segments of these customer lists, and then when we get a good promotion, then we can roll out to those segments of the list. So our mailing list is broke down quarter by quarter for the last 10-12 years. It's broke down a bunch of different ways, and it's kind of complicated. But the part that's not complicated, the part that everybody should think about, is the thing that's really revolutionized us. We're up to mailing number 463 right now. It's more mailings for more money more often. I mean, that's, you know, just constantly. You see, a lot of business people, they never really stop and think, well, where am I going to get the revenue next month? What am I going to do? You know, they're never planning ahead. Like Joe was talking about.
Everybody is writing down more mailings, more money, more often. People were taking no notes all day long.
Yeah, but it's simple. It's really simple, but you have to have a system or it won't work. You know, and one of the things that Dan has taught us is, I tell you, it's been a struggle, but then what isn't a struggle? I mean, you know, I used to take way too long on all of the mailing. Now, you know, Dan's got that phrase, it doesn't have to be good, it just has to be good enough. And I've got that written on a little post-it note that's sticking up where I can see it. You know, I mean, but so it's a simple strategy. I mean, always trying to look ahead, having maybe like a regular meeting where you can get together with your key people, or even if your key people are just your printer and your mail house or whatever. And the insatiability of these customers, that's been a real lesson, a learning thing.
Yeah, the converse is most business people underestimate the capacity of their customers to consume.
They'll just keep buying and buying and buying and buying as long as you're giving them what they want and you're taking good care of them.
So what you're saying is you used to do crisis management, always in chaos, and you're still in chaos, but you've got it planned ahead now.
Well, they used to mail.
You know what you're going to do before you do it.
Some of it probably was. You mail until we got a potload of money, and then rest, and then mail again. But
it was all
a lot
sporadic.
Of it was frequency.
Yeah, it was just sporadic. There was no plan. There was no goal. Now there's a goal. The goal is, I mean, get up to mailing number 1,000 as fast as we can. You know, I mean, because the more we mail, the more money we make.
See, all of us to our customers. I know Joe does it to his members. I have a variation of it that I give to my subscribers. And you have it in your kit for your people. The year's plan of marketing campaigns, and often event tied. Like you said, a Super Bowl. So, you know, what is there in January we're going to tie a theme to and do a campaign on? What is that? And it's planned out for the whole year. We all teach it. And I'm betting 95, 96, 97% of the people never create a year's plan for what they're going to do every month in marketing and promotion with deadlines and schedules.
Well,
I'll bet it never happens.
There's no way we could do it. I'm serious, Dan. Maybe it's just because I'm such an unorganized guy. So flaky or whatever, but I can never think more than a month or two ahead, but at least I'm thinking a month or two ahead. And at least I've got, you know, I mean, you know.
Well, but you are, because you know you're going to try and... know you're going to do 100 during the year. You know you're going to do 2 a week. I mean, you're planned out further than 2 months.
Right. But we're always trying to do more all the time.
You know, Dan, Bob Willis, there's an interesting part of this that I think for people that have employees, and that is what you do is you meet every week with the employees to keep the employees focused on where we're going all the time.
Right, because the employees don't have a clue as to where the company is going to make money. And now that Eileen's got them on this profit-sharing program that's all tied into, and they realize that it's all coming from these mailings that we do every month, they're excited now. I mean, you know, they get excited about helping us get all these mailings out because they finally figured out that's where their income comes from.
Structure follows strategy.
This is Bill Glazer. And following up on your point, Dan, about the yearly marketing calendar, one thing that I think most of us teach our kids is to work on your business rather than in your business. And I know that when I sit on my kids, when I hear back from the folks that buy my kids, that's the one thing that they all respond back to me. Like they say, if there's one strategy that was like a revelation to me was, hey, I should stop working in my business and start working on my business. And I sort of teach my people that once a week for 2 hours at a time, they should just work on their business. So stop, you know, doing the day-to-day drudgery of it and really think about working on your business. And whether that's, you know, bringing together your key people and having some kind of a meeting for accountability and talk about planning and future, et cetera, that will be those 2 hours. You'll make so much more money those 2 hours than you will the other, you know, 56 hours you work in, you know, taking care of customers, et cetera.
And the best time to work on your business is when you're not in your business.
Physically, yeah.
Physically. Right. I mean, get out of town, go away.
Well, I mean, it happens when we all come together here.
Yes.
I mean,
the reasons we come together.
I mean, big time.
You this morning, cup of coffee, and after the meeting at night. And I know, you know, the benefit is almost as much just having somebody hold a gun against your head and get you out of your business for 2 days and come to a distance location where they don't get at you much.
Where you can stand back and look at it from an objective point of view and not be sucked into all the daily details and putting out fires, which frankly we as entrepreneurs shouldn't be subjected to do anyway, but somehow we always are.
I had a client for years, had a number of physical therapy centers, and he was just incapable of making this transition, and he couldn't work at home because he had 5 kids and, you know, all that. We made him go. He rented an office above the little bank in his little town, and put, you know, a desk and a chair and that in there, but no phone. This pretty much before everybody was schlepping around cell phones. He didn't have a cell phone. There's no phone in the office, no fax machine in the office, no communication device whatsoever. When he was in that office, nobody could communicate with him, and he couldn't communicate with anybody else, you know, and he would go there for a set period of time. I think it was 2 hours a week or 3 hours a week, two days, bolt the door, and that was to think. That's it. Blank legal pad, pen, think.
Sort of like we do on airplanes.
No, I'm talking about David Apps, as a matter of fact. But George used to have a shack.
Yeah, George had he had a place that he went.
Out on the river. Yep.
Can I? This is Joe Polish.
No.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you need to go check on the progress on your statue.
Speaking of that,
the pigeons are hungry.
These guys are so hurtful with their humor. Bill, what you said was a very good point. Which I would like to ask you, what exactly, you run a pretty good sized company, where do you go when you go to think and when you go to work on your business, not in your business?
Well, actually, you know, I guess I break one rule that I just heard here. We actually have a closed door meeting similar to what we do here. We get together, in which I have my key people, management people come in together, myself, and we have a set agenda. But no one can interrupt that meeting at all. Then once a year, we actually go on a retreat, a strategic business planning retreat, which we do quite a bit of preparation prior to that to poll all of our employees. We have 65 employees in our 2 stores. To poll our employees about what our company's strengths and weaknesses are and environmental threats, et cetera. And then we get together for 2 days and really plan out our next 3 years and our next year. So we do that once a year, but then we follow it up on a weekly basis to sort of see where we stand. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, I mean, everybody does it differently. It's just always curious to me because I think it's probably one of the most important habits that anyone that's ever going to make any substantial amount of money is going to get into, which is thinking, you know, removing yourself from an environment of busyness to an area where you can just think. I mean, an hour of effective thinking is worth more than a month of just running around doing hard work. And empire builders are people that spend all their time, not all their time, but a good portion of their time thinking and strategizing and planning and removing themselves from all the nonsense that most business owners spend their time doing.
You know, Joe, there's also the working on the marketing. You know, those of us who teach marketing, we all hear that. The first thing everybody says when I order our stuff is, well, I don't have time to do any of that stuff. And that's, you know, and the answer always was, you block the time to do that, too.
You don't do that, you don't. The rest of it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's why some people ask me why I spend so much time on airplanes. I don't mind, because that's where I do almost all of my writing and a lot of my thinking. If I can turn off the person sitting next to me, which isn't for me hard, I just tell them shut up to get through noise.
Now, why do we find that hard to believe?
No. You should use my message.
Yeah,
introduce yourself and tell them you're an IRS agent.
Oh, that's good. I'll write that one.
There's not another word of conversation.
But I get a lot of writing done on planes, a lot of thinking done on planes. When I'm at an event like this, I'm sitting here and I'm going to kill all day Friday, and I'm looking so forward to it. I got one lousy meeting Friday. It could take me about an hour. I'm looking forward to the whole rest of the day with nothing to do but write and think and plan and go over an enormous amount of notes here that I'm going to get 10% of done when I get back that we gleaned out of this meeting. And most entrepreneurs don't get it. They spend their entire lives so hung up in the day-to-day details that they forget to step back and plan. And that's exactly what TJ just said. And he's not abnormal. He's absolutely normal. And that's why they never get out of the mom and pop stage. They never stand back and look at the macro. They're so busy making a living, they don't take time to make any real money.
Again, Bill Glazer here. Just to follow up on that, and specifically to what Dan said about people not spending time on marketing, I teach we're menswear retailers, and a normal menswear retailer spends about 80% of his day worrying about having the right merchandise in his store, and the other 18% of his day figuring out how to make sure their operations work right, and 2% of his time thinking about marketing. And I tell them it should be a third, a third, and a third. One third of their time should really be spent on how do they market their business, because they might have the best merchandise in the world and deliver it the best way, but if they don't let anybody know about it, they're not going to do any business.
That's million-dollar advice that most people will ignore.
Take a check.
Yeah, and it's nicely simple. You know, the simple stuff, like Cosman used to show everybody how to do an ad by dividing the page into fourths. You know, here's what goes here, here's what goes here, and here's what goes here. That's it. Now just use that, you know. And he had two. He had one in thirds and one in fourths. That was it. And really, you're better off having that, maybe, than 56 different ways to do something. I mean, that's as good a formula as any. One third, one third, one third. Here, go schedule today. Nice.
I spend a lot more than a third on marketing in my business. Of course, I've had other people who do all that other crap, but that's mainly what I do.
That's because you don't have to waste your time picking out the right suits.
Correct. Yeah. I don't buy pencils and crap.
Okay. You in?
Yeah, I'd like to jump in here because it kind of ties into what TJ was talking about with more mailings and more money more often. I got something from Dan Kennedy's copywriting seminar.
Oh, your name.
Donald Duck.
Really?
No, Jeff Gardner. I got something that just... It's helped me create marketing. My marketing that I create takes a lot less time. It's a lot more effective, so I'm able to go out to my customers more often and really milk that list. And basically what it started out with, Dan was talking about, well, we all got it pounded into our heads about swipe files and letter libraries, and I know everyone here has it, and everyone listening should create one if they don't have it. But they get so large, sometimes it's difficult to go back in and find exactly what you need. And Dan was talking about doing shortcuts and creating, like, headline templates. And I thought that was an awesome idea. So I went out and I started making, like, all these templates. Well, then I thought, well, why not do it with bullets? So I was getting, like, boardroom reports and all these sales letters, so I started doing bullets. And I thought, well, you know, why not do it with everything? So I started going through my swipe file, and I just started creating a manual of offers and bonuses and guarantees and closes and postscripts and everything. So now if I can't come up with something, I can just open it up, flip to the section, and I've got 10, 20 awesome guarantees, change it around just a little bit, and boom, I've got my sales letter done in half the time. It's more effective because I'm using what works for other people and their controls, and I can go out to those people and make the sale, so I get more stuff into the mail.
Would you define a swipe file, please?
Yeah, it's basically just ads, sales letters that are working, and you just file them away in big cardboard boxes that your spouse hates and tells you to burn, but you keep them. And you can go in and pull out information. I like calling it a swipe file, but you don't really copy anything. You just go in for ideas and mine it for formats and how they form an offer, and it's incredibly valuable to people because you create it from mail that's sent to you or ads you have to get, don't value it enough.
I used to cut and paste. I do it less and less the more I've done. But early on, I used to rely on those files. Okay, got to write a letter about X. Go through the swipe files and find a headline. Lay that on the floor here. Go through the swipe files and find an opening paragraph from somewhere else that you think you can tweak and make work. Lay that there. Go find the next part. Go find the next part. Get it all laid out. And now you kind of just polish the edges and stitch the pieces together.
Wait a minute.
And
we thought you wrote all that stuff you charge those big bucks for. Now you're telling us you didn't?
Hell,
you just cut and paste all that stuff?
You betcha, Bob. The value in me is what's stored, not what I do. But, I mean, you know, I came and created for you, essentially, for your business, essentially what he's talking about, a bank, a master book of
letters. But you didn't tell me you write all that stuff. I thought you went home and spent months working on my case.
He probably
had it done before he got off the plane, didn't he?
Jeff, you could turn that manual into a product.
Sure is.
We all throw a pitch coming up.
I was already reaching for my wallet.
You know, it doesn't really much matter how it shows up as long as it gets you the result that you want. The whole thing goes back to, you know, all people want to see is the baby. They don't want to hear about the labor pains. And as long as
and speed counts for a lot. I mean, he's absolutely. You got to find ways to speed it up. So, like PK says, you can't mail more if you can't get the thing put together. You know, and so you got to find ways to speed it up. And I mean, he's exactly right. Who's next? Who's in?
We're still doing the great grand
thing. We're doing the grand million-dollar breakthrough, the thing that's made the most difference. Who's
all right? I'll do it. I'll do it. This is Joe. Polish, you should already know me.
Yes. from the shade of his statue.
You know, I'll never hear the end of this. You'll be getting letters in the mail. What was the, you know, the tape was okay, except for that egotistical guy.
Joe, building his legacy. Like Bill.
There's no short supply of self-confidence at this table.
That is true.
Where do you go?
Well, from the standpoint of what I've taught my clients, I would say really getting them to understand that there's 5 to 6 times more expensive to get a new customer than it is to sell an existing customer. And to actually do relationship marketing and to value their database. Gary Halbert once told me that if he had to get up in front of a room and of general business people that was of about 1,000 people or more, and all of them were in a bazillion different businesses, and he had to give them any one piece of advice in 30 seconds or less, he would tell them to collect the names of all their prospects and clients and mail to them relentlessly over and over again and continue to sell them stuff. And one thing that I've really taught my clients is just keep going to that pool. You know, Dan has made the analogy of, you know, you keep sticking the bucket in the well until no water comes up. And most people just do not do that. And so really teaching lifetime value of a client, package selling, continuity. And where I'm at with my marketing business and selling my books and tapes and information products, you know, I've done pretty big days in terms of selling. From seminars and stuff, you know, I've done boot camps that have brought in a couple $100,000 and stuff. But one of my biggest new things for anyone that's in the educational or information marketing business is using conference calls and teleseminars, using a takeaway selling process where you actually have people jump over hurdles in order to qualify to buy or do business with you. And if you don't know what takeaway selling is, then I would highly recommend you read Dan's book, No BS Sales Success. Read the last chapter. That's a great part of that book. I think everyone should read that chapter about 20 times to really get it into their head, the power of takeaway selling. But I recently did a teleseminar. I recently did a teleseminar. Hey, I'm trying to talk to you, Dan. I'm just kidding. I did a teleseminar that was a 75-minute call that brought over $250,000 in sales just using this process, which is a process that I, of course, will package up and offer to other people. But it's something that allows you to teach people what it is that you know without having to travel anywhere, without having to dress up nice, and you've got notes and things. You don't have to have them, you know, set up on PowerPoint or on overheads or anything. You can literally put people on a phone call and communicate the information that way. So it's another form to deliver information, and you can use it to teach people and train people, and you could also use it as a selling tool. And, you know, my clients love it, and it also works real well to sell them a lot of stuff, and I believe it'll make me millions of dollars in the next few years. Awesome.